On behalf of the Newhall Family Theater and Mark II Entertainment, welcome to the extended interview of Talking Backstage. I'm your host, Tom Lund. Today's guest is someone I've known since elementary school, Michael Winter. Before the stay-at-home orders in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, Michael was performing with the Boston Symphony Orchestra and Boston Pops as their third horn. A horn player is part of the brass section in an orchestra and plays what we commonly refer to as the French horn. In this episode, Michael shares with us some stories of his time as a student at Placerita Junior High School, as well as some of the pieces and performance opportunities he has had with the Boston Symphony Orchestra. So, Michael, hello. Thanks for taking time out to speak with us.
It's my pleasure. It's nice to see you.
All right. So first question, nice and easy, is what schools did you attend when you lived in Santa Clarita?
When I lived in Santa Clarita, I went to Santa Clarita Elementary School. And then for junior high school, my brother and I went to Placerita and then Hart High School.
Very cool. And do you remember like what age you first started getting into music?
I started playing the piano before I started playing the horn because my mom said it was the best way to learn notes and rhythms and all that. And she was right, but I was a horrible piano player. So I think I picked up the horn a little more seriously, like as far as starting it, because it meant I could quit the piano. And that was probably fifth grade or so.
Okay. And were there music classes that you were taking through the school itself, or was it through outside private lessons?
Well, I was taking outside private lessons kind of from the very get-go, which most instrumental musicians, that's kind of the main stuff for players who end up going on to play professionally. A little bit of school stuff, but the really intense kind of school playing started when we went to Placerita Junior High, because they had a really serious band program. And as good as the arts programs were in the Santa Clarita Valley in general, Placerita's was kind of a cut above the rest.
Gotcha. And that's why you and your brother went then, instead of going to the classic Arroyo Seco from Santa Clarita, you guys transferred across the city.
That's right. Arroyo Seco was just down the street from our house, and we could have done that easily.
That's right.
But the band director at the time at Hart was a woman named Catherine Spula, who just retired a couple years ago, I think. And she was just kind of remarkable what she was able to do with that program. So we decided we would kind of give it a shot and transfer kind of to a different place that was, you know, more difficult to get to and all that, just because we wanted to see what that was like. And see if that really kind of kept our interest. And we figured, okay, after 2 years, if the music thing ends up being really important, then we go across the street to Hart, who also had a slightly, you know, above everybody else level in their band program. And if not, then we, you know, easy enough to go to Saugus, which was also pretty close to our house with, you know, everybody else we went to elementary school with.
Right. Now, what was those programs like at the junior high and high school level? Like, what made them different? Was it focused more on like classical stuff? Were you learning pop stuff? Like, just walk me through that.
It was honestly kind of your normal band program. It was the classical-ish band music. The difference is, I think, literally just the quality of the conductors. Anthony Bailey, who I think is still at Hart, who came in our second year at Hart High School, was really good. Both he and Miss Bula were very disciplined with the whole class. So I think that made a really big difference as far as dictating how things went, that kind of early attention to detail, even though it's junior high school band, kind of pushing the envelope and insisting on that discipline, I think really helped move things in the direction that those programs went.
Cool. And then what inspired you then, you know, after high school, what inspired you to continue to pursue a career in music?
I really enjoyed playing the horn in general, and I was getting pretty good at it. And I figured as far as performance stuff, it's kind of one of those things, if you think you want to give it a shot, then there's kind of only one time in your life to do it, which is kind of when you get out of high school. You have to swing for the fences and see what happens. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. Classical music performance, by and large, it's not one of those things that you can decide when you're 35, you know what, I'd like a career change and I want to, you know, try going this direction. It's a pretty narrow window. So that's kind of, if you want to do it when you graduate from high school, that's it. That's your window.
Gotcha. And then obviously you went to college for music?
Yep. I went to New England Conservatory of Music in Boston, where I'm actually on faculty now.
Oh, cool.
And the tradition kind of at NEC is that the Boston Symphony Brass Section is on faculty it was then, it is now. So New England Conservatory is literally across the street from Boston Symphony Hall.
So there's really cool.
A pretty good connection there.
A good partnership with them.
Yeah.
Very cool. So then were there any teachers that had a lasting influence on your music career?
With instrumental musicians, the private one-on-one teachers is really the kind of influential people. My grandfather was my first teacher, and he was a really, really well-known horn professor. He taught at Fresno State. Across the entire world, people knew who he was because he was really a remarkably fine teacher. And then my other two teachers I had when I was still living in the LA area, John Mason and Jim Thatcher. And then when I got to NEC, my two teachers, both BSO players, one of them, Dick Mackey, who has since retired from Fourth Horn, and Gus Sebring, who's the associate principal horn in the BSO and principal horn in the Pops. I started studying with him then, and he's still a member of our section now.
So what was the process like getting into the Boston Pops? Because that's kind of like a world-renowned orchestra. Everyone hears about them. We see them on national TV. What's the process to get into an ensemble like that?
So the process with any American or Canadian orchestra is more or less the same, which is orchestras advertise in a basically a monthly newspaper called the International Musician. It's published by the AFM, which is basically the Musicians Union. Okay. And so the first of the month, you kind of roll out of bed and check your phone and see, okay, who's retiring? What auditions are happening? And you see one that you want to take. And this is whether it's the Boston Symphony or the Pacific Symphony or kind of any union orchestra has the same system in North America and a lot of other places in the world. So you send in your resume to that orchestra. And you wait a little bit, and there's a committee within the orchestra that looks at your resume and decides, basically, are we going to invite you for a live audition, or are we going to make you send a tape? Okay. Because if it's an orchestra like the BSO, and somebody who's a freshman in college says, oh, I want to come audition, it might be worth their time and your time to make sure they're up to it. Because there are a lot of just freakishly talented people out there who you could hear a tape and be like, well, you're a freshman, but we'd really like to hear you. And they're the people that, you know, maybe it's not a good use of time for everybody to do that. So either they'll ask for a tape or they'll say, based on your resume, that's fine. And they'll send you a list that's usually a full page of music for you to learn. And when you compile it in a folder, it's usually about like that. It's a lot of stuff. And sometimes it's like, okay, we want to hear these lines from this piece. And sometimes it's, no, we'd just like you to prepare this complete 90-minute work. And, you know, we'll tell you day of what we want to play. So it's a lot of effort. So you learn all this stuff. You, wherever the orchestra is, like in Boston, you fly to Boston at your own expense. It's not like a job interview where they put you up, you pay for your own hotel. Show up at the day of the audition, and the BSO was actually the first organization to start blind auditions to try and cut down on any funny business discrimination, anything like that. So when you show up, the audition committee, which is, you know, depending on the orchestra and their rules, anywhere between 5 and 12 people usually, they're sequestered somewhere else so they can't see who's coming in to take the audition. You meet somebody at the front door and they check your name off a list. And they say, okay, you'll play in 45 minutes. And when it comes time, you walk up to the stage. And when you walk onto the stage, you usually walk along a carpet so they can't tell if it's a woman wearing high heels or a guy wearing big boots or something like that. The committee is behind a curtain, a black screen, so nobody can see anybody. So you walk to the middle of the stage and sit down. The personnel manager walks out with you the whole time. The first round of the audition is 5 or 7 excerpts, different pieces of music. In the case of the BSO, a lot of time you don't know what you're going to play before you get up there. And you sit down and the personnel manager just puts a piece of music on the stage and says, play from here, start there, or stop there. And you play that. And if that goes well enough, then he puts another piece of paper in front of you and says, start there, stop there. So you do that for a couple of things. Wow. And if at any point it's going not particularly well, you'll hear from the committee, thank you. And thank you is the international musician term for you're done.
Yeah.
Stop playing.
Yeah. That's that's in the arts too. And in yep. regular theater auditions, it's the same thing. You hear thank you and you go, all right.
Got it. Okay. And every yeah. now and then you try and read something. If it's thank you, you're like, hey, did I get to the end and someone's uh-huh. interested? Or are you just trying to be like, attaboy, better luck next time?
Sure.
So anyway, and then you go back and sit in a room with a bunch of other people from year round who are looking at their feet. And usually at the end of each hour, the personal manager comes down and says, thank you all for your time. The committee would like to advance numbers, whatever, or sometimes no numbers from this round at all. And then you just keep doing that. For my job, it was prelims, semis, and then we did three final rounds. And the last final round, the screen comes down and you actually do section playing. So you sit with your potential colleagues and you all play a chunk of music together to see, okay, how does this fit? And then they bring the next person in and okay. And it's not just, you know, did you hit the right notes or whatever else? It's, does your style match the existing style of the organization?
Wow. So was there another symphony or orchestra that you played with before you were accepted by the BSO?
Yeah. Before that, I played principal horn in the Buffalo Philharmonic. Before that, I played principal horn in the Syracuse Symphony. Before that, I played third horn in Rhode Island Philharmonic.
So walk me through, just because I'm not a musician, principal horn, third horn, fourth horn, what's the difference between those different positions?
So there's some basic stuff like second and fourth horn tend to play lower in the range.
Oh, okay.
They play low notes, first and third play high notes. Principal horn is has more of the solo stuff usually, but as far as different positions, it's kind of more like first, second, third base on a baseball team. You know, everybody has to be unbelievably capable of doing any task that comes their way. There's just kind of specific things that one person might specialize kind of over another. But at the end of the day, everyone, like when we play music like of John Williams, everybody has to do everything. It's not like, oh, you guys play the low notes, we'll play the high notes. It's everybody, all hands on deck, everybody has to do the same thing and be able to, you know, keep going at the same pace.
Very cool. So you just dropped a pretty big name there, John Williams. What have been some of your favorite pieces that you've worked on, or conductors or composers that you've been able to work with?
The honest answer is it's hard to pick even a handful. The BSO Incorporated, so we kind of have two brands, Boston Symphony and Boston Pops. They're both under the okay. broad umbrella of the BSO. Total in a 12-month period of time throughout the organization, we do roughly 200 concerts and 900 different pieces wow. of music in a season.
In a season?
In a season.
Holy cow.
So we, during the BSO season, which is roughly September to December, we okay. have four rehearsals and four concerts a week. During the month of December is holiday wow. pops. We do roughly 45 pops concerts. Uh-huh. So like Monday, Tuesday, Thursday nights, and then double Wednesday, three shows on Saturday, three shows on Sunday. We've managed to get in quite a lot of services. So that's, I mean, we get to do a lot of really, really, really cool stuff. Obviously playing for John Williams is a tremendous thrill. He used to be the conductor of the Boston Pops and we see him a couple of times a year. He comes and conducts concerts of his own music. So that's always kind of a thrill, but we've gotten to do some really fun stuff. Our music director, Andres Nelsons, is not too much older than me. And he's one of the greatest conductors I've ever worked with. It's totally a thrill. We've gotten to tour Europe and Asia and a lot of other, a lot of cool stuff.
Well, that's really cool.
Yeah.
All right.
It's
so
it's a busy time.
It's a yeah, very I mean, busy time.
Not now, obviously, but you know,
right,
under
right.
normal times, you know, we keep pretty busy.
All right. So speaking of that, walk me through what's a typical day like? Like if you've got, say, your busiest time of the year, or if you've got a concert on the weekend, what does that look like? What are you guys doing to prepare for that?
My general routine is I get up at 6:30 so I can shower and warm up before the rest of the house wakes up. We have a 2.5-year-old daughter. So
yes, congratulations.
Thank you. I have to kind of get that morning chunk in. And okay. by warm up, it's as much just, it's not actually warming up the muscles. Usually we're playing enough. That doesn't take more than a couple of notes. Okay. But it's kind of triage, like how beat up am I from the day before? It's a lot of just kind of going, it's like a basketball player shooting free throws. You're not, sure. You're just kind of working on your fundamentals and making sure your kind of your action is in a good place. And then as far as other playing during the day, it really depends on what the job has coming up mm-hmm. that week. Sometimes there's playing that's so intense at work, other than warming up in the morning and playing a couple notes before rehearsal and concert, I don't do a ton of playing because the job is just taking everything out of me. And then the other weeks sure. where it's like, okay, this is a lighter week and I have this other thing coming up. So I gotta really practice and focus on that.
Well, because what I was going to say, like with the warm-ups, I've always wondered how musicians do it. As a vocalist, I know, you know, I have my scales and stuff like that that I go through to make sure that I can warm the voice up to get to those notes. But obviously with musicians, it's more about, you know, where your hands are and how your fingers are working and stuff like that, correct?
Yeah, it's for horn, because we've only got, you know, the couple of buttons right here. It's less about the hand stuff. It's more about the muscle structure in here. For me, in the same way that you see a baseball player take a swing and they can hit a home run and you're just like, boy, that looks like it's nothing. It's not because physically it requires no effort. It's because their motion, their form is so efficient that it might not look like they're working particularly hard. In the case of a brass player, that's about air. That's about the simplest way is making sure that your inhale and exhale is as easy as possible. If it's more complicated than a yawn, it's too complicated. So for me, that is doing scales. It's playing with a metronome. It's playing with a drone to make sure my pitch is really in the right place every day. It's kind of moving all around the instrument to kind of check in before I go into work and I'm in a setting where other people can hear me and rely on me to, you know, play well. I got to kind of make sure, okay, what's working, what's not working, what do I need to refine a little bit this morning, you know, before I get on the job.
So aside from obviously the immense amount of music that the BSO plays, what are some typical challenges that you faced as a professional musician?
As a professional musician, one of the biggest challenges is simply put getting a job, taking an audition.
Yeah,
is really, really challenging. Even when an audition goes well, mm-hmm. it's still not a fantastic experience because it's so much work. It's so much effort. If you're going to take an audition and really do well, life has to kind of stop for a while and your entire world just becomes that, which is really, really exhausting. It's physically exhausting, just kind of having one focus in your life for months and months at a time. It's emotionally exhausting because you're showing up to a orchestra that you would like to play for. So you have respect for all the people and the institution and the history of it. And you're literally showing up blind. You're just a number. And you're completely putting yourself out there. You're going to sit on stage and you're going to say, this is the best that I can possibly do right now. And they're either going to say, we're kind of interested. Come back and play again in about an hour. Or they're going to say, and it's not personal, but it's really challenging for it to not be a personal thing when you put in months of effort and all the money of flights and hotels and get there. And maybe, maybe not.
You mentioned earlier that the BSO, they do like a blind audition. And in the entertainment industry, a lot of times it's either who you know, what job skills you're able to bring to it. In the orchestra world, what have you seen? Has it been who you know or your work, or is it a little bit of both?
Who you know can be helpful as far as playing extra. So if somebody gets sick, they need somebody to fill in playing playing a certain part this week. Then obviously you have to know somebody. So a player can be like, hey, I heard this person play and it's pretty good. We could fit them in and I think that would be okay. As far as taking an audition, that's of very little value. I played extra for 5 years with the BSO before I won the job. And on the day of the audition, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You have to play clean. You have to play in time. You have to play the right notes. You have to play with heart and soul. And just because I went to school and knew all these people really well, doesn't matter. There are a lot of people who have connections and everybody knows everybody and grew up with each other's kids.
Sure.
On the day of, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha. So when it comes down to like your time management, learning the different pieces of music or even learning how to deal with rejection from auditions and stuff. Is that something that you think you learned from going to college for music? Do you think it was something that was already instilled upon you? Where do you think you developed those skills?
I think going to college for it, going to a music conservatory, which is a hyper-focused environment for that kind of thing, is really important for a lot of people. And certainly it was for me. It's as much kind of time management because you have a ton of music coming at you. You have to learn pretty quickly, okay, what do I need to really sit down and practice slowly and learn? And what can I look at and say, okay, I've never played that, but that'll be fine. I can just play it down and that'll be all right. Learning that balance, and it's different for every person. And then just muscle management. These muscles are only so big and only can take so much abuse because, I mean, they're tiny and you've got a mouthpiece that's that big. So like a pianist can practice 8 hours a day in a music conservatory. That's fine. A brass player cannot do that. You'll damage the musculature in your face. So you have to figure out a lot of that kind of time management stuff that applies to the job, you know, knowing when in rehearsal be like, all right, I need to take 5% off the top end of the volume so that I'm not beat up at the end of the week, kind of knowing how far you can push yourself at the extremes of volumes and stuff like that. And the mental thing is really, really challenging because really the only way to figure it out is to do it and get kicked in the teeth a couple of times and, you know, figure out because everybody's process for that kind of stuff and how to be able to walk out the door the next day still motivated, like, okay, cool, we're going to keep going. And also, I mean, the pressure of playing the job is not insignificant either. Our second concert of Tanglewood last summer, so our summer venue, I was playing principal or associate principal horn all last summer. So I was playing principal horn of the Pops. And our second concert of the summer was all John Williams music with John conducting. And I was out on the lawn with my aunt and uncle because we have like it's a 20,000 seat lawn at Tanglewood.
Oh, wow.
People bring picnics and it's really fun.
Sure.
Anyway, so I was hanging out with them before I went back to play the concert. My Apple Watch tapped me on the wrist and said, that thing, you know, breathe, it can help reduce stress. And I looked at it. My uncle looked at my watch and said, not today, I can't. You know, I mean, playing a concert where you've got a major solo, sometimes where you're literally everybody stops and it's just you or 20,000 people, they'll kick your heart rate up a notch or two. And the only way to really figure out how to process that and not get in your own head is to do it. So trial by fire.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, 10, 15 years down the road, obviously the BSO is, like I said earlier, is a very well-known, well-respected orchestra. 15 years down the road, do you see yourself still playing with them? Is there like a dream job in the orchestra world that you would like?
This is it. Boston Symphony's
That's it.
Is the dream job. When I retire, I will be retiring from the Boston Symphony.
Wow. That's really cool, though.
Yeah, it's really cool. There are lots of industries, you know, I mean, like Tom Brady just left the Patriots to try something different down in Florida.
My condolences.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
You know, I'm a huge Patriots fan, so I get it.
It's
hard.
That hurt me.
Oh, it hurt me so deep. Bad. And then to take Gronk with him.
That was even worse. Yeah. But I mean, like you see things like that in sports and other industries.
Sure.
In the orchestra world, these jobs are, these kind of top tier jobs are, there are so few of them. Yeah. Basically when somebody gets a job in the Boston Symphony or Chicago Symphony or Berlin Philharmonic, you stay there till you decide that it's time to retire. It's not like, oh, I'll go try something new.
Sure. Now, is it something that you would like to then, during that time, become principal horn? Are you cool with third horn just because
I'm good with third horn. I get plenty of spotlight time. I get a lot of principal horn time. There's nothing that I'm missing that I'm not getting from the job. Certainly the challenges come, you know, every day. And the level of playing is so high. There's no chance that I'm ever going to get bored and say, well, I'm too good at this. I want to try something new. That's just never going to happen. So
totally understandable.
Yeah.
All right, so let's travel back in time. If there's something that you could, like a piece of advice that you could give to your younger self or to the next generation now about what it takes to become a professional musician or any important things that you've learned during your career, what would that be?
I think the advice that I would give, which is what I give to my students now at NEC, which are undergrad and graduate students, work your butt off. And when you do, have an attention to detail. It's not just about, well, I spent 3 hours playing the horn today, so that's good enough. You have to really want it. You have to really work hard. Across the arts in general, theater, movies, music, athletics is the same, really. You've got an incredible flood of talent in an incredibly narrow lane for them all to try and squeeze into to do something professionally that's lucrative. So you have to work harder than you ever knew is possible. And that attention to detail to refining your craft is incredibly important. It can't just be that you're passionate about it. One of the things, if you look at a great singer like Renee Fleming, she's a great opera singer. But if she hadn't been an opera singer, her same drive, she would have been a Fortune 500 CEO. That's her personality and work ethic. I just caught up with a friend of mine from undergrad who I hadn't talked to in about a decade. And he was a trombone player with me, freakishly talented, but also worked about as hard as anyone I've ever met. And he still plays a little bit, but his main focus is physical therapy. And he said that when he decided to go back to school to get his doctorate in physical therapy, he said it really wasn't that difficult because he just took kind of the same gear and put it into something else. That's really kind of what it comes down to. When you look at super talented people, be it Tom Brady or Renee Fleming or, you know, people like that who are at the apex of their profession, there's a lot of talent, but there's also, I mean, like you ask people about Tom Brady and they say, when he was quarterback of the Patriots, he worked harder than everybody else. He was the first person in the stadium. He was the last one to leave. Yep. If you had an answer, he had the question because he had read everything there was to read about this play in the history of that team. It's kind of the same thing, in our world.
No, that's really cool. So last question, really, before we went into shutdown, what type of projects were you working on with the BSO?
BSO has some ongoing recording projects. We're recording all the Shostakovich symphonies and we're recording half of the Strauss tone poems. They're split. Our music director is also music director of the Gewandhaus Orchestra. So they're recording half, we're recording half. And those are all kind of Herculean tasks. They're really intense. So, and kind of just our normal grind. We were supposed to go on tour to Asia in February, which got canceled.
Yep.
Obviously. And, you know, we go on overseas tours about once a year. So that's part of our usual thing. How that goes in the future, I'm not quite sure.
Right.
But the job kind of just throws different stuff at us always. And some summers or some winter seasons are unbelievably heavy and challenging. Mm-hmm. And some are slightly lighter, but you just kind of keep going. So we're certainly in a strange period of time right now, not having our usual groove.
Right. But I mentioned before we went on air, I saw that you guys did like a remote from home recording thing. Is that something that you guys have been doing here and there throughout? Was that a one-time thing? Do you think you guys will be doing more of that stuff?
We will definitely be doing more of those. That Very one-time cool. thing was an idea that came from one of our trumpet players to our administration. Okay. And they talked to John Williams about it. He wrote some of the heroes for the Olympics. And then we have an arrangement when he was conductor of the Pops that, you know, we played a lot of the times. We've done a couple of times with him. And we did this kind of remote, all of us in our own houses, and then our audio crew glued it all together. And the product was Very really, cool. really good. Keith Lockhart, our conductor of the Boston Pops currently, conducted everything. So we've got that going that's already come out. There's another one in the hopper that until it's released, I should keep it to myself.
That's totally fine. I totally understand how that goes.
It's a smaller thing kind of for the local audience. But I'm sure there'll be more of those coming up.
That's really cool.
You know, projects like that. They're actually really time consuming because I mean, like specific to me, if I'm going to record something, I have to have a quiet house.
Yes.
So you don't hear da da da.
Yeah. I saw the video of you practicing with your daughter.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Me trying to record something with her fingers in your ear standing there.
Adorable.
Most of my quality time comes in the basement at about 10:30 at night. So that's why a lot of the backdrops you'll see like a cinder block wall behind me. That's why.
Good to know.
And you know, editing all this kind of stuff together when our poor audio guys get 100 different emails with clips. It's a big project.
Yeah, no, it's really impressive that you guys have been able to do that. Anything else you'd like to talk about or plug while we got you here?
No, this is such a weird time. That all the orchestras, theaters, arts districts, movie sets in the entire world have been silenced. And no time in history that I can think of have we even approached something like this. It's a really challenging time. It's going to continue to be a challenging time for a while. But the thing I kind of hang on to is the more we're all cooped up indoors, the more we all desperately want a connection, the more we want to be able to get back and have something that we can listen to and watch and participate in that kind of involves us emotionally more than just sitting and watching something on TV, which is as far as any of us can do right now. So as dark as this is, I think we will come out of this and we will have the same draw and the same passion as audiences and participants that we've always had, because kind of emotionally in our souls, we have to have this in our lives.
Wow. That was beautiful. That was really well said, man. I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I appreciate it, man. Thank you very much for taking the time out. It was great talking with you and hearing again. Like I said, this is a world completely unknown to me. I love music. I love listening to orchestral music. No idea how you guys get into it and all that kind of stuff. So it was a great learning experience for me.
It's a funny little world that I live in. Thank you. It's great to see you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, man. It's great seeing you too. It was great catching up.
Yeah.
So that basically wraps it up. I appreciate your time, especially since I know you're still East Coast time. So I know it's in the afternoon right now for you, like late afternoon. So I appreciate you taking time. And I look forward to seeing more stuff from the BSO and from you specifically, my friend.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining me here at the Newhall Family Theater. Until next time, I'm your host, Tom Lund. I'll see you backstage.